Christian in Complete Armor by William Grinnell. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. Chapter 11. The third kind of spiritual pride, viz., pride of privileges. The third kind of pride, spiritual pride, I mean, is pride of privileges, with which these wicked spirits labor to blow up the Christian. To name three. First, when God calls a person to some eminent place, or uses him to do some special piece of service. Secondly, when God honors a saint to suffer for his truth or cause. Thirdly, when God flows in with more than ordinary manifestations of his love and fills the soul with joy and comfort. These are privileges not equally dispensed to all, and therefore, where they are, Satan takes the advantage of assaulting such with pride. Section 1. First, when God calls a person to some eminent place or uses him to do some special piece of service. Indeed, it requires a great measure of grace to keep the heart low when the man stands high. The apostle, speaking how a minister of the gospel should be qualified, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 6, said, he must not be a novice or a young convert, lest he should be lifted up with pride and fall into the condemnation of the devil. As if he had said, this calling is honorable, if he be not well balanced with humility. A little gust from Satan will toss him into the sin. The 70 that Christ first sent out to preach the gospel and prevailed so miraculously over Satan, even these, while they trod on the serpent's head, he turned again and had like to have stung with them with pride, which our Savior perceived, when they returned in triumph and told what great miracles they had wrought. And therefore he takes them off that glorifying, lest it should degenerate into vainglory, and bids them not rejoice that devils are subject to them, but rather that their names are written in heaven. As if he had said, it is not the honor of your calling and success of your ministry that will save you. There shall be some cast to the devils, who say then, Lord, Lord, in thy name we have cast out devils. And therefore value not yourself by that, but rather evidence to your souls that ye are mine elect ones, which will stand you more instead at the great day than all this. Section 2. A second privilege is when God honors a person to suffer for his truth. This is a great privilege. Unto you it is given not only to believe, but to suffer for his sake. God doth not use to give worthless gifts to his saints. There is some preciousness in it which a carnal eye cannot see. Faith, you will say, is a greater gift, but perseverance greater, without which faith would be little worth, and perseverance in suffering, this above both honorable. This makes John Careless, our English martyr, who, though he died not at the stake, yet in prison for Christ, say, such an hour it is as angels are not permitted to have. Therefore, God, forgive me mine unthankfulness. Now, when Satan cannot scare a soul from prison, yet then he will labor to puff him up in prison. When he cannot make him pity himself, then he will flatter him till he his pride's in himself. Affliction from God exposes to impatiency, for God to pride, and therefore Christians labor to fortify themselves against this temptation of Satan. How soon you may be called to suffering work, you know not. Such clouds alt are not long arising. Now, to keep thy heart humble, when thou art honored to suffer for the truth, consider. First, though thou dost not deserve those sufferings at man's hand, thou canst and mayest in that regard glory in thy innocency. Thou sufferest not as an evildoer, yet thou canst not but confess it is a just affliction from God in regard of sin in thee, and this, methinks, should keep thee humble. The same suffering may be martyrdom in regard of man, and yet a fatherly chastising for sin in regard of God. None suffered without sin but Christ, and therefore none may glory in them but he. Christ in his own, we in his. God forbid that I should glory, save in the cross of Christ. Galatians chapter 6. This kept Mr. Bradford humble in his sufferings for the truth. None more rejoiced in them and blessed God for them, yet none more humble under them than he. And what kept him in this humble frame? Read his godly letters, and you shall find almost in all how he bemoans his sins and the sins of the Protestants under the reign of King Edward. It was time, saith he, for God to put his rod into the Papa's hands. We were grown so proud, formal, unfruitful, yea, so as to loathe and despise the means of grace when we enjoyed the liberty thereof, and therefore God hath brought the wheel of persecution on us. As he looked at the honor to make him thankful, so to sin to keep him humble. Secondly, consider who bears thee up and carries thee through thy sufferings for Christ. Is it thy grace or his that is sufficient for such a work, thy spirit or Christ by which thou speakest, when called to bear witness to the truth? How comes it to pass thou art a sufferer, and not a persecutor, a confessor, and not a denier, yea, a betrayer of Christ and his gospel? This thou owest to God. He is not beholden to thee, that thou would part with estate, credit, or life itself for his sake. If thou hast 1,000 lives, thou wouldest owe them all to him, but thou art beholden to God exceedingly, that he will call for these in this way, which has such an honor and reward attending it. He might have suffered thee to live in thy lust, and at last to suffer the loss of all these for them. Oh, how many die at the gallows as martyrs in the devil's cause, for felonies, rapes, and murders. Oh, he might withdraw his grace and lead thee to thy own cowardice and unbelief, and then thou wouldest show thyself in thy colors. The stoutest champions for Christ have been taught how weak they are in Christ's steps aside. Some that have given great testimony of their faith and resolution in Christ's cause, even to come so near dying for his name, as to give themselves to be bound to the stake and fire to be kindled upon them. Yet then their hearts have failed, as that holy man, Mr. Benbridge, in our English martyrology, who thrust the faggots from him and carried out, I recant, I recant. Yet this man, when reinforced in his faith, and endured with power from above, was able within the space of a week after that sad foil to die at the stake cheerfully. He that overcame death for us is he that always overcame death in us. And who should be thy song but he that is thy strength? Applaud not thyself, but bless him. It is one of God's name. He is called of the glory of his people's strength. Psalms 89, verse 17. The more thou gloriest in God that gives thee strength to suffer for him, the less thou wilt boast of thyself. A thankful heart and a proud cannot dwell together in one bosom. Thirdly, consider what a foul plot pride gives to all thy sufferings. Where it is not bewailed and resisted, it alters the case. The old saying is that it is not the punishment, but the cause makes the martyr. He may safely say whether it is not barely the cause, but the sincere frame of the heart and suffering for a good cause that makes a man a martyr in God's sight. Though thou shouldest give thy body to be burned, if thou hast not a humble heart of a sufferer for Christ, thou turnest merchant for thyself. Thou deniest but one self to set up another, runnest the hazard of thy estate and life to gain some applause, it may be, and rear up a monument to thy honor in the opinions of men. Thou doest no more in this case than a soldier, who for the name of valor will venture into the mouth of danger and death. only thou showest thy pride under a religious disguise. Yet this that helps it not, but makes it worse. If thou wilt in thy sufferings be a sacrifice acceptable to God, thou must not only be ready to offer up thy life for his truth, but sacrifice thy pride also, or else thou mayest tumble out of one fire into another. Suffer here from man as a seeming champion for the gospel, and in another world from God, for robbing him of his glory in thy sufferings. Section 3. A third privilege is when God flows in with more than ordinary manifestations of his love. Then the Christian is in danger of having his heart secretly lifted up in pride. Indeed, the genuine and natural effect which such discoveries of divine love have on a gracious soul is to humble it. The sight of mercy increases the sense of sin, and that sense dissolves the soul kindly into sorrow, as we see in Magdalene. The heart which possibly was hard and frozen in the shade will give and thaw in the sunshine of love, and so long all pride is hid from the creature's eye. Then saith God, Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 31, ye shall remember your ways and your doings, and they were not good, and shall loathe yourself in your own sight, etc. And when shall this be, but when God would save them from all their uncleanness, as appears in verse 25. Yet notwithstanding this, there remain such dregs of corruption unpurged out of the best, that Satan finds it not impossible to make the manifestations of God's love an occasion of pride to the Christian. And truly God lets us see our proneness to this sin in the short stay he makes, when he comes with any greater discoveries of his love. The Comforter, it is true, abides forever in the saint's bosom, but his joys come and are gone again quickly. They are choice foods with which he feasts the believer, but the cloth is soon drawn, and why so? But because he cannot bear them for our everyday food. A short interview of heaven and a vision of love now and then upon the mount of an urgency or affliction cheers the spirits of drooping Christians who, might they have leave to build tabernacles there and dwell under a constant shine of such manifestations, would be prone to forget themselves and think they were lords of their own comforts. If holy Paul was in danger of falling into this distemper of pride from his short rapture, to prevent which God saw it needful to let him blood with a thorn in the flesh, would not our blood much more grow too rank, and we too crank and wanton, if we should feed long on such luscious food? And therefore, if ever, Christian, thou hast need to watch, then is the time when comforts abound, and God dangles thee most on the knee of his love, when his face shines with clearest manifestations, lest this pride and the sin of the pride as a thief in the candle should extinguish thy joy. To prevent which, thou shouldest do well first to look that thou measurest not thy grace by thy comfort, lest so thou shouldest be led into a false opinion that thy grace is strong because thy comforts are so. Satan will be ready to help forward such thought as a fit medium to lift thee up and slacken thy care and duty for the future. Such discoveries do indeed bear witness to the truth of thy grace, but not to the degree and measure of it. The weak child may be, yea, is oftener in the lap than the strong. Secondly, do not so much applaud thyself in thy present comfort as labor to improve it for the glory of God. Up and eat, saith the angel to the prophet, because the journey is too great for thee. The manifestations of God's love are to fit us for our work. It is one thing to rejoice in the light of our comfort, and another to go forth in the power of the Spirit comforting us as giants refreshed with this wine, to run our race of duty and obedience with more strength and elasticity. He shows his pride that spends his time in telling his money merely to see how rich he is, but he has wisdom that lays out his money and trades with it. The boaster of his comforts will lose what he hath, when he that improves his comforts in a fuller trade of duty shall add more to what he hath Third, I remember thou dependest on God for the continuance of thy comfort. They are not the smiles thou hast yesterday can make thee joyous today any more than the bread thou didst then eat can make thee strong. Without more, thou needest new discoveries for new comforts. Let God hide his face, and thou wilt soon lose the sight and forget the taste of what thou even now hast. It is beyond our skill or power to preserve these impressions of joy and comfortable apprehensions of God's favor in our spirit, which sometimes we find as God's presence brings those. So when he goes, he carries them away with him as the setting sun doth the day. We would laugh heartily at him who, when the sun shines in at his window, should think by shutting that to imprison the sunbeams in his chamber, and doth not show as much folly, who thinkest because thou now hast comfort, thou therefore shalt never be in darkness of spirit more. The believer's comfort is like Israel's manna. It is not like our ordinary bread and provision we buy at market and lock up in our cupboards, where we can go to it when we will. No, it is rained as that was from heaven. Indeed, God provided for them after this sort to humble them. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 16. Who feed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee. It was not such mean food, because that God is said to humble them, for it was delicious food, therefore called angels' food. Psalms chapter 78, verse 25. Such as, if angels did eat, might serve them, but the manner of the dispensing it from hand to mouth, every day their portion and no more, so that God kept the key of their cupboard, they stood to his immediate allowancy, and thus God communicates our spiritual comforts for the same end, to humble us. So much for this second sort of spiritual wickedness. I had thought to have incidents in some other as hypocrisy and belief morality. But possibly the subject being general, what I have already said may be thought but a deep digression, and that too long. I shall therefore conclude this branch of spiritual wickedness in a word to those who are yet in a natural and unsanctified state, which is to stir them up from what I have said concerning Satan's assaulting believers with such temptations, to consider seriously that Satan's chief design against them also lies in the same sins. These are the wickednesses he labors to engulf you in above all others. If ever you perish, it will be by the hand of these sins. It is your seared conscience, blind mind, and impenitent heart will be your undoing if you miscarry finally. Other sins the devil knows are preparatory to these, and therefore he draws thee into them to bring thee into these. Two ways they prepare a way to spiritual sins. First, as they naturally dispose the sinner to them. It is the nature of sin to blind the mind, stupefy the conscience, harden the heart, as it implies in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13. Lest your heart be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. As the feet of travelers beat the highway hard, so does walking in carnal, gross sins the heart. They benumb the conscience, so that in time the sinner loses his feeling and can carry his lust and his heart as bedlams, their pins and their very flesh, without pain and remorse. Secondly, as they do provoke God by their juristic act to give them up to these sins. Lamentations chapter 3, verse 65. Give them obstinacy of heart, so it is in the margin. They curse unto them. But when the devil hath got sinners at this pass, then he hath them under lock and key. They are the forerunners of damnation. If God leave thy heart hardened and broken up, it is a sad sign he means not to sow the seed of grace there. O sinners, pray, as he did request Peter for him, that none of these things may come upon you, and which that they may not take heed, thou rejectest not the offers he makes to soften thee. God's hardening is a consequent of and a punishment for our hardening our own hearts. It is most true what the prosperous saith. A man may lose temporals against his will, but not spiritual. God will harden none, damn none, against their will. End of chapter 11, having been read by Peter John Parisis. None of my audios are copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God.